All right. Well, hello everyone. It's good to be here with you. I'm here at the retreat house, and it's very quiet. Cheryl has gone into her room early. She was tired, so she's cuddling up in her bed in her room. And Jacqueline is not here. Usually, it's the three of us, so it feels very, very quiet right now. It looks like the last time I read from I Am That, which seems like an eternity ago, it would have been before I went to Italy. It looks like I stopped in the middle of a message. So I'm actually in the middle of a message called Desirelessness, the Highest Bliss. It's number 16, and I Am That. And I don't really remember the first half of the message. I'm not going to remember something that happened weeks ago. However, the question that we're starting with tonight is a pretty good question. So I'm just going to treat it as if it's a different message and go from here. So the question that we have is, how does one go beyond the mind? That's a pretty good question, don't you think? How does one go beyond the mind? And here's Nisargadatta's answer. There are many starting points. They all lead to the same goal. You may begin with selfless work, abandoning the fruits of your action. You may then give up thinking and end in giving up all desires. Here, giving up is the operational factor. Or you may not bother about anything you want, think, or do, and just stay put in the thought and the feeling, I am, focusing I am firmly in your mind. All kinds of experience may come to you. Remain unmoved in the knowledge that all perceivable is transient. And only the I am endures. So, what I read here is, is really two kinds of recommendations. The first recommendation is what I believe is called karma yoga. And karma yoga is when you're following the path that life lays out for you, but you're doing it in a detached way. It's really the path that's laid out, at least the way I read it, in the Bhagavad Gita, right? In the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna was like a general, and he was to lead an army into battle against the other side, which happened to be relatives of his that had kind of taken over the kingdom unscrupulously. And so his job is to lead the army into battle against his relatives. And if you know the story of the Bhagavad Gita, you'll know that as he's looking across the field and seeing his relatives there, he says, I can't do this. I just can't do this. And Krishna explains to him that this is his duty, this is his karma. And what he needs to do is follow his karma, but he needs to do it with detachment, with an eye on truth. One thing I've always liked about karma yoga is that I have a pretty busy life. Although I do take time each morning. My special time for contemplation. Once the day gets going, it's a very, very busy life. And I don't ever want to spend a couple of hours in the morning with God and then the rest of the day caught up in the world. That's the way my life used to be once upon a time. I would spend a couple hours in the morning with God, but then once I got up from my chair and moved into my life, I went back to my conditioning. I went back to my old habits, and that first couple of hours with God was forgotten. So one thing I like about karma yoga is karma yoga turns your life, whatever your life is, into your spiritual practice. And so you no longer have your time with God and then your life. You know, you don't have the spiritual time in your day and then the non-spiritual, right? Every moment of your day is for the purpose of awakening. And every single thing that happens in your day is for the purpose of awakening. And so that's what I hear him describing in the first part of this paragraph when he's answering, how does one go beyond mind? And I think that's pretty cool because some of us do have these busy lives. We have jobs, we have families, right? Maybe we volunteer for Awakening Together in some way. So we have a lot of things going on. And so it's really nice to be told that your busy life is not an obstacle to awakening, or at least it doesn't have to be. And Ramana Maharshi always said this too, right? So if we listen to Nisargadatta, again, he says there are many starting points. I hear him describing two, but he says there are many starting points. They all lead to the same goal. And then he says, you may begin with selfless work, abandoning the fruits of your action. Right? So selfless work means you're not attempting to achieve anything for the self. You're not attempting to achieve anything for the self. And one thing that a lot of people think about as selfless work is like volunteering, right? And volunteering most definitely can be selfless. But the truth is, if you realize that your life, the way that your life is unfolding, it's just what consciousness is giving you to do. This is what Krishna was teaching Arjuna. This is your role. This is what consciousness is giving you to do. You can lead any life in a selfless way. If you just see your life as, this is what consciousness is giving me to do, any life becomes a service. So again, the real trick, if you want to use your life as it is, as a path of awakening, you do not want to live your life for personal gain. Not for any type of personal gain. That doesn't mean you won't make money. It just means you don't see the money as yours, which I know to a lot of people sounds crazy, but it's true. You're the steward of the money you make, right? And even in the way that you spend your money and give away your money, you live by guidance, right? You don't actually possess your money. So your life becomes a selfless service to consciousness, whatever it is. Because whatever life you have, that is the life the consciousness has given you to live. Right, so it's a selfless service to consciousness. And if you have that attitude of your life is a selfless service to consciousness, you can see maybe how this is going to help you to go beyond the mind. Because if you pay attention to the mind is always talking about me in one way or another. What can I get out of this? How are other people looking at me? What do I need to avoid in order to feel safe, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So when you make your life a selfless work, abandoning the fruits of action, right, in order to do that, you have to disregard the mind in your daily living. You have to disregard the mind in your daily living. Therefore, you will go beyond the mind because you're disregarding it. In fact, in the second part of this paragraph, when he talks about focusing on the I am firmly, right? He says, all kinds of experience may come to you. Remain unmoved in the knowledge that all perceivable is transient and only the I am endures. It's kind of like what we call awareness, watching awareness meditation. However, in effect, you can kind of do the same thing while living a busy life. You remain fully focused on your attitude of selfless work, fully focused on your attitude of this is not my life, this is the life the consciousness has given me to live, right? You stay fully focused on that attitude and you disregard the mind, and therefore you transcend the mind, even though you look like, you know, every other busy person on the planet Earth. He says, you may begin with selfless work, abandoning the fruits of action. You may then give up thinking and end in giving up all desires. So this is how you mature in your practice of karma yoga, in your practice of letting your life be your spiritual path. You start with selfless service, and then you move into giving up thinking. You just be with life as life comes. You no longer think about life. And then lastly, you know, at least in the order he's sharing this, I don't know if it always happens in this order, but lastly, in the way he's sharing it, you give up desires, right? It's interesting because earlier today we were reading from the Tao Te Ching, and we read verse 1, and of course I interpreted verse 1 through the question of, you know, how is this helpful to enlightened leadership? And what we came to is what I called lesson number 1. In fact, it's the title of the recording today. Lesson number 1, don't want anything. I don't want anything, just be. And that's the same thing that Nisargadatta is saying here. It's the exact same teaching, right? This is the karma yoga. You do everything that life gives you to do, even if you're Arjuna and you're a general and you have to lead your army into battle against your relatives. You do whatever life gives you to do. It's not your life. It's selfless service. You're playing the role that consciousness has given you to play. You don't even need to think about it. You just move as you're moved, and you give up wanting anything from it. And that's a method of transcending the mind. And the next method that he gives us in this paragraph is, again, let me go ahead and finish reading this. I don't know if I've read all of it. I think this is the core of it, but let me just read the whole thing again. He says, you may begin with selfless work, abandoning the fruits of action. You may then give up thinking and end in giving up all desires. Here, giving up is the operational factor. And of course, I call that letting go, right? You're giving up the ego, or you're letting go of the ego. You're giving up or letting go of the sense of I want, right? I do. Also mine. This is my life, my job, my achievements, right? You're giving up the I and the mine, and the mine, M-I-N-E. Which is also giving up the mind, M-I-N-D. But you're giving up the I and the mind, which is, of course, letting go of the ego. So he says here, giving up is the operational factor. Or you may not bother about anything you want, think, or do, and just stay put in the thought and feeling, I am. And this is what we call awareness, watching awareness. And this was the path that Nisargadatta took, right? Nisargadatta's teacher asked him to stay focused on the I am presence. And Nisargadatta did work a job. In fact, if I have the story right, he actually owned several cigarette stands. So he did work a job. But from what I understand, when he came home, he used all of his spare time, just like Michael Langford recommends. He used all of his spare time in meditation, focused solely on the I am presence, right? Focused solely on the sense of I am. And so this is the other recommendation that he's making, which is the path he took. Or you may not bother about anything you want, think, or do, and stay put in the thought and feeling I am, focusing I am firmly in your mind. All kinds of experience may come to you. Remain unmoved in the knowledge that all perceivable is transient and only the I am endures. Right, so just don't have anything to do with anything. Focus solely on the I am presence. Now, here's what the questioner says. I cannot give all my life to such practices. I have my duties to attend to. And I think that's very interesting because to me, the very first recommendation that Nisargadatta made, which I call karma yoga, you can do that and have all your duties. I mean, you know, so as long as you have no attachment to the fruits of your labor, as long as you're not doing it for me or mine, you're not trying to get anything out of it, you just see it as the life the consciousness gave you and it's selfless service, you can take care of any duty, right? But apparently the listener did not hear it that way because he says, I cannot give all my life to such practices. I have my duties to attend to. And so Nisargadatta says, by all means, attend to your duties. Action in which you are not emotionally involved and which is beneficial and does not cause suffering will not bind you. You may be engaged in several directions and work with enormous zest, yet remain inwardly free and quiet, with a mirror-like mind that reflects all without being affected. And that's how I feel that I live my life right now. You know, my physical life is a very, very busy life. But what I feel on the inside is that I am simply happy. Simply happy to be wherever I am right now, doing whatever I am right now, not having any particular plans, you know, like a, you know, like when it comes to the retreat house, for example, which is where I'm working a lot right now, you know, I have guidance. I have guidance, so I understand the purpose of the retreat house, and therefore I understand the kinds of things we need to do to set it up. But I don't have imagination about what's going to happen here, you know. I'm living forward and finding out. Living forward and finding out. I feel very present, very happy to serve, very excited to be, just to be, and that's it. That's the end of the story, and everything else will kind of unfold, and it's like watching a story, a living storybook, and I'm excited to watch. So I guess what Nisargadatta is saying and what I am also saying here is there is another way to live our lives. We don't have to live our lives all caught up in our lives. We can live our lives while inwardly free. By seeing each moment as transient, and by not being attached. And for me, I think also seeing everything as an adventure, right? You know, like when you go to watch a movie, or you go to read a novel, You don't want to know what's happening next. Right? They call it a spoiler when somebody tells you, "Oh, did you hear? You know, this character dies at the end." You're like, "Ah, you know, I don't want to know that." Right? Because you don't know what's happening next. You want the adventure. And that's what life feels like to me. It feels like an open and fun adventure. And I don't want to know what's happening next, and I don't want to try to make a certain thing happen. I just want to do my job, just live my role as it's given to me, and watch. Right? So that's what Nisargadatta is explaining to this man. It can be that way, right? By all means, attend to your duties. Action in which you are not emotionally involved, and which is beneficial. You know, he's not talking about being a thief or a murderer, right? And which is beneficial and does not cause suffering will not bind you. You may be engaged in several directions and work with enormous zest, where that describes my life lately, yet remain inwardly free and quiet. That also describes my life lately. With a mirror-like mind that reflects all without being affected. And the questioner says, is such a state realizable? Nisargadatta says, I would not talk about it if it were not. Why should I engage in fancies? The questioner says, everybody quotes scriptures. Nisargadatta says, those who know only scriptures know nothing. Listen to this next sentence. It's actually, this next sentence is one of my very favorite Nisargadatta quotes. To know is to be. I know what I'm talking about. It is not from reading or hearsay. That's one of my very favorite quotes from Nisargadatta. I even remember the first time I read that sentence. That's how much I love it. I was sitting on an airplane, still on the tarmac because there was fog. I was sitting on an airplane in Bangalore, India, waiting to take off and return home, you know, after a trip to Tiruvannamalai. But I was reading The Seven Steps to Awakening, and I came across this quote in The Seven Steps to Awakening by Nisargadatta. To know is to be. In order to know something, you have to be it. So, in order to know happiness, you have to be happy. In order to know detachment, you have to be detached. Right? In order to know freedom, you have to be free. And I love that quote because I'm trying to find words right now. I love that quote because I guess the only answer I have is because it inspires me to be, inspires me to know, because the two words become synonymous. It inspires me to be. Inspires me to know. In other words, the book learning is not enough. I remember, and it was around the same period of time, I remember making a very distinct decision that I didn't want to learn anything else. I only wanted to know through my direct experience. No more intellectual knowing. Only the type of knowing that Nisargadatta is talking about here being. That's a very important decision. And I think it's a decision that probably everyone makes at some point on the spiritual path, because I think we do start out learning, right? Reading. You know, we read about what peace is, we read about what liberation is. We imagine with our thinking mind. And yet there's no being happening yet. Right? It's reading and thinking about it. At some point, we have to move beyond the phase of reading and thinking about it, and we have to be it. And you know, when we make the decision to be it, we don't necessarily be it immediately, at least not consistently, because of course we have a lot of old conditioning that's still at work. So we may choose to be happy, for example, and then find ourselves getting angry, you know, within a couple of days of deciding to be happy, or within a couple of hours of deciding to be happy. But if we're really committed to being it, we start receiving intuition that guides us in how to be it. For example, if we decide to be happy, and then within a couple hours we find ourselves getting angry at someone, an intuition arises that says something like, okay, so be happy with being angry. Be happy with the experience of anger. And we start learning how to be happy with whatever is. And through that being happy, we learn what genuine, true happiness really is. So I love this quote, you know, those who know only scriptures know nothing. To know is to be. I know what I am talking about. It is not from reading or hearsay. The questioner says, I'm studying Sanskrit under a professor. But really, I am only reading scriptures. I am in search of self-realization, and I came to receive the needed guidance. Kindly tell me, what am I to do? Sargadatta, I swear, sometimes he comes off to me as a bit of a smart ass. He says, since you have read the scriptures, why do you ask me? The questioner says, the scriptures show the general directions, but the individual needs personal instructions. Nisargadatta says, your own self is your ultimate teacher. The outer teacher is merely a milestone. It is only your inner teacher that will walk with you to the goal, for he is the goal. What was I reading the other day? I remember reading and teaching about, I think it was Ramana Maharshi, the Grace of the Guru section. I was reading and teaching about how an outer guru cannot walk with you all day long, holding your hand and whispering in your ear. That was Ramana Maharshi. An outer guru cannot walk with you all day long, holding your hand and whispering in your ear. Only an inner guru can do that. And of course, the inner guru is the most important teacher, which is why here at Awakening Together, we help people, hopefully, to develop that relationship with the inner guru, right? Because that's the most important relationship in the awakening process. That's where you get your personal instruction rather than the generic instruction. And with that, I am out of time. So I will release the mic, and I know that I'm now the last program on the schedule. So Kim, while you're playing the closing song, I will quickly think of a title and type it in for you. Okay? Good night, everyone. Thanks for coming and being with me.